So usually begin with some kirtan. Let everybody settle down. Meditation, the main aspect of meditation usually is hearing. All great yogis, they would meditate, but they'd meditate on mantra. And the efficacy of your meditation is how focused you can be on the mantra. So, hearing is made easy by music. So it facilitates a nice meditation. So it's nice to begin a program generally with kirtan. And then we can discuss some philosophy. Today's topic is environment on consciousness. By the grace of the facilitators here at Yoga Maya, Glenn and Bryn and Stacy, I've been invited to come every month and discuss some relevant spiritual topic. So it will be some continuity, although each lecture will be a unit within itself. But I'm going to do a little review of just one thing I spoke last time. I gave a test. And the idea was that if you answered yes on every question, you did not need to take the class. And we have a system, if you gave a donation, it can be refunded everything. If you answered yes on everything. How many people were here last time? I'm not going to embarrass anybody, but there was quite a few. Does anybody remember the questions that were asked? What? What is that? Have you found what you're looking for? Anybody remember the second one? Is it eternal? And the third one is, are you able to focus on it all the time? See, if you answered yes to all those questions, you are called self-realized. You have no problems. You don't have to listen to a class of philosophy. But generally, at best, me included, we only be able to answer yes to the first two. At least, do you have what you're looking for? Yes, I'm looking for a realization of my spiritual self. Is it eternal? Yes. You know, are you able to focus on it all the time? And generally, we all agreed no. And therefore, we have to work on that. Because unless we come to that platform, we can never become fully satisfied. And that's what yoga, basically, the purpose of yoga means. There's an understanding that there's this spiritual platform that's Sat Chit Ananda. It's eternal. It's full of knowledge. It's full of happiness. There's no problems in terms of who we actually are. Our problem is a matter of perception. And generally, in yoga, there's an understanding that there's an eternal self, and then there's the body and the mind. And the real problems are existing in terms of the body and the mind, and not the real self. But because we're identifying with the body and the mind, then we suffer. Including the illusion of non-existence. Because we're eternal. This death actually doesn't exist. We're only seeing that we're dying. We're only seeing that we're getting old. We're only seeing that we're getting disease. And it's very, very real because the identification is very, very strong. So no means that you're not yet living on this platform. And therefore, you have to do something to get there. I gave a very simple example last time. to explain this. It would be like a person who was fully healthy and having a nightmare that he has a terrible disease. The problem is in perception, not actuality. So that's basically, if you're in, you know, this is yoga maya, this is a school of yoga, it's actually a philosophy, it's a practice, to actually come to that point. So basically, we are now identifying with the body and mind. So yoga deals with this to make it the appropriate instrument to realize the soul. We gave another simple example. The mind is like a lens. And if the lens is distorted, or if the lens is dirty, then your vision is also distorted. So as long as the mind is not purified, then we look through the lens, our vision is distorted, and we think that we are not eternal. And we think that we're impure. And therefore, we suffer. So yoga means, if this is the body and the mind, yoga means to bring the mind to its original, like an instrument. It's to fix the instrument. Because when the instrument is fixed, then it perfectly reflects the self. Through the lens of the mind, you'll see, this is who I am, the person who is not diseased, the person who is not dying, the eternal person. And the whole purpose of yoga is to mold the mind from its distorted perception. And what is that called? The classic definition of yoga is what? Yoga, citta, vritti, nirodha. Yoga means that the citta, or the mind, that you finish the distortions of the mind that affect the vision and give you all the problems that you have. So yoga is to bring the mind to a better state. Now, in this yoga psychology, the mind is very malleable. From morning to evening, it's changing forms. And according to the form it's in, then you have a different level of perception, you have a different level of contentment, you have a different level of self-discipline. So yoga is a very, very scientific process to help the mind come from its distorted perception, the broken mind, and bring it to a higher point of clarity, contentment, and self-discipline. And that's why when you even do the exercise, you feel afterwards there's also a change in the mind. So there's a great science of this in India. Now, again, watch the mind, it's malleable. And we're going to give, I do things by the hands. This would indicate one condition of the mind that's called ignorance. And that makes the mind inactive, depressed. This is one condition of the mind. It would be different shapes. This is called passion. This makes the mind materialistic, selfish. And this is a condition of the mind called goodness. And this makes the mind enlightened. It makes the mind very, very clear. It makes the mind very, very peaceful. It makes the mind very, very happy. So Indian philosophy and Indian psychology, it's very, very profound. It really knows how things work in a very, very comprehensive way. Now today, in terms of this mind, we really want to elevate the mind. And you can even do it quickly, actually. Not for a long time, but you can do it quickly. There's three factors that influence the shape or mode of the mind. One is your destinies. Sometimes you just have karmic things that are causing lethargy, causing increased desire, giving you even a little more enlightenment. One is your actions. If you act in particular ways, it has effect on the mind. I always describe the term dharma. This term dharma is a common term, but it has many, many different... But if you really want to understand what dharma means, you have to look at the Sanskrit root. And the Sanskrit root of dharma means essence. Essence means the quality which cannot be taken away from something. The essence of sugar is sweetness, the essence of water is liquidity. Dharma means your essence. And your essence is this pure selfless being. So real dharma are those actions in every circumstance that help mold your mind to a higher degree of perception so you can see yourself. So there's a whole science of dharma, how you respond to different actions. But what we're going to talk about today is the environment and its effect on the mind. And of all things, this may be the most powerful. What is your environment? Your environment are the objects of your sight, the objects of your hearing, the objects of your smell, the objects of your touch, the objects of your taste. How that is formed and which the form of the objects that you associate with will have a profound influence on your mind. Paramahamsa Yogananda said that in terms of willpower, in terms of self-discipline, environment is more powerful than willpower. You know, I studied Bhagavad Gita for many, many years. I met Bryn in Vrindavan. My connection with Bryn is from Vrindavan, a place where I live, a very holy place. And I used to teach Bhagavad Gita there. I take many, many groups through Bhagavad Gita. And if you know the Bhagavad Gita, it's divided into three sections. And the middle section is the most important. It's the section on bhakti, because it's just like when someone walks, an important person, you know, if there's an entourage, who's in the center, the most important person? If you have a treasure, do you keep it on your, I don't know, you all back lawn, front lawn, I don't know. You keep it in the center of the house. So, but in the later sections, in the 14th chapter, it discusses this knowledge that's called Paramajnana. The topmost jnana or knowledge. And I was surprised. And what was it about? It was about the effect of environment on consciousness. In fact, before I came here, not directly before I came here, if I have time, I'll tell you the interesting story of me flying down to Nashville by a friend of mine whose father was the agent of Elvis Presley. And he used to sit on his lap when he was young. Elvis used to take him to the carnival. And then he became a famous kirtaneer around the world. And he never did kirtan in his hometown. Before that, I'm a monk, I'm wandering, I have a little place upstate New York where, when I'm not traveling, so I finally had a break. I was traveling many, many places, and I always wanted to do this vow that I do in India. I do it 1 month in India, and it entails a substantial amount of meditation every day. And I've always found it hard to do it in America, even when I'm free. But this thing, time, the first thing I did was I worked on my environment. Before I began my vow, I worked on my environment. I'll tell you about that in certain ways. Especially the neatness, the cleanliness of the place. We're going to get into this. And I worked on the environment. And I got that willpower and discipline. It impacts the consciousness very, very powerfully. And I want to discuss the science of this. Before I do that, maybe in ourselves, you know, we can actually think sometime during the class, maybe we can meditate now. If there's something that we want to do, some spiritual discipline or something, either reducing our eating or waking up early or increasing our meditation or reading spiritual books, or one of the many things that we should be doing but we can't. Try to pick one of those things in your life that you should be doing. You know, it's something that you should be doing, and the only reason you don't do it is because you somehow lack the willpower or discipline. Don't pick something that you can't possibly do. Pick something within your range. I always talk that in any type of development in life, there's where you are, and then there's a next step. And the distance between where you are and the next step is called an obstacle. And generally, the obstacle is, so really think, what is your next step? And when you get to the next step, then you'll have another obstacle between the one higher than that, but you'll be at a higher state. Pick that one thing. Just meditate in your mind. That one thing that you'd like to do. And then perhaps at the end of the class, we can talk about picking a thing in your environment that you can change that will impact your consciousness to help you do it. When I was on the plane, I don't know, I had this karma when I was on the plane. I didn't know I was going to last Thursday to this program in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm going to discuss things about music because sound is one of the main objects of the senses. But somehow or other, I don't know why it was, but on the way there, on the way back, I had great people sitting next to me. And they were both from Juilliard School of Music. On the flight there and the flight back, just a coincidence. And the person, this is just to give you an example, was telling me about the Mozart effect. It was very, very fascinating, the Mozart effect. They do it with mice. You know, mice got a press thing, or their cheese, or whatever they do. But if they play Mozart, the efficiency increases 30%. We had such an interesting discussion about this. But then I told him why. And he said, wow, you know so much about music. I said, wow. We all have different fortes. Music is not a strong point. You like to sing kirtan. He said, you know so much. There, let me tell you at the end how I analyzed this Mozart effect. Then there was also, I was on the phone to another friend of mine talking something else. And he was talking about a friend of mine who's a great scientist. Really, oh, what a mind this person had. And he studied paranormal psychology, and he said, he was telling me about these experiments that they would do where they would have meditators and they would have this machine. It's kind of like a pinball machine that you put against the wall. And you have a funnel, and then these balls come down the side. And you know, no matter how they fall, they're going to bounce one way or another. So he had the meditators concentrate on one side. Concentrate on one side. And there was an influence. There was a connection, a mind-matter connection. But then, they took the experiment from the yoga convention to the local chamber of commerce. And there was very little effect. Even though the yogis were meditating. Because the environment has such a powerful effect on consciousness. And what I like about Indian philosophy, it's such a simple point, but it tells you why. It's something practical. It's something you can institute in your life. It's mystical, but not mystical. In India, you know, there's no mysticism because you know how it works. It's only mysticism when you don't know how it works. You study the Yoga Sutras, you know very well how someone can become invisible. It's called samana. You have this deep meditation. They never do just samadhi. It's always dharana, dhyan, samadhi, the last three stages. You kind of got, it's like starting a car. You got to rev yourself up. And they meditate. And by meditating, they can get into the subtle aspects of matter and reorient a yogi so it doesn't reflect light. There's a great science there. So I really want to discuss it now. That's just kind of basically and I really want to focus, connect this, the environment to self-discipline. There's a famous book, I quoted it last time, called Hito Pradesh. It's an ancient book. Upadesh means instructions. Hito means for good. Instructions that give good. Instructions that give welfare. And the first thing is our decisions determine our fate or future. What we are now has been determined by the decisions we made in the past. What will be in the future determined by the decisions. One good decision to do something good or to change your world in a way will have tremendous impact on one's life. So this class is to give you the tools of self-discipline, not by willpower, but by changing environment. Okay, now before I discuss this, I got to give a little basic summary of yoga psychology. Just a little bit basic thing, just 5 minutes. And then it'll give you the framework, and then we'll discuss the environment, the objects of sight, the objects of sound, and what can you do to elevate your consciousness. So everything is composed, both gross and subtle, of subtle strands of matter, material. Even the mind. And they're called gunas. And there's three basic gunas. And they give you the ability to conduct different activities. For example, again, this is ignorance. It gives you the ability to conduct immobilization. It can put you to sleep. It can make you lazy. It can prevent you from doing what you should be doing. So that's ignorance. Then there is passion. It gives you the ability to conduct materialistic activities. More, better. It's restless consciousness. What are the two things against yoga? It's one is sleep, inertia, because yoga means meditation, and one is restlessness. One is called loya, sleep, one is called vikshepa, restless. These are the two things that prevent yoga, that prevent you from focusing and bringing the mind to a state where you can see your eternal self and be free from the dualities and anxieties of the world. There are people that live on this platform ahead. It's okay. So, and then there's goodness, right? We made the head. And what is good? Goodness gives you the ability to conduct enlightened thought. Now remember, everything is composed of these modes.
Welcome.
Everything is composed of these modes. Both the gross environment and in the mind. So it means if the mind is in goodness, then the condition would be prakash, light would be in the senses. You would see things extremely clearly. You'd make distinctions very, very finely. You can see the difference between the self and the body. If you study or read, you'll be very efficient. If you write, your mind will be very, very clear. You'll be pensive. You'll be thoughtful. You can make decisions. Everything that impacts your life favorably. So that would be the... what would be... goodness. So the mind is in that condition. And everything externally is in that condition. Because something that's in ignorance will affect the mind by making it immobile or lazy. Something that's in passion will increase your materialistic activity. Talking to my friend from Juilliard, he's the director of the children's choir in Upper Manhattan. They travel around the world with inner city kids. Showed me the pictures from Japan. He's a conductor of choral thing. And he told me, and we were discussing that, why in the military do they play this kind of music? Because it's music in this mode. And they want the soldiers. They want the soldiers at the hypersense of activity. They play that mode. And because it actually affects the mind very, very rapidly. Their objective is, let the mind be like this. We don't want it like this, and we don't want it like this. We want the mind in a certain real heavy mode. Well, let's play that music. They have the drums and the trumpets. It affects the mind. It's such a direct correlation. So everything externally and internally are in these modes and give you different abilities to conduct your life. So it's a very, very important science to actually understand. Now, the culture, the original culture of India, I was going to talk about this later, was called Brahminical culture. It was how to organize the environment in goodness. Because the whole purpose of the society was to bring you to a condition of clarity, enlightenment. So they had a whole culture of how the environment should be structured. How the relationship should be structured, how the sound should be structured, how the visual should be structured, how the food should be structured, to support one, to bring the mind to this condition. Basically, you know, it gives you free will also. If we're in these lower modes, we sacrifice our free will. In ignorance, we practically have no free will. If someone says something to us and we're in that mode of ignorance, we just woke up, or we overate and we just slept and then we woke up in ignorance, or we were intoxicated, you know, taking some alcohol, some beer. If we're in that condition and someone said something to us, we would respond without a distance between what was said and how we react. But But let's say you did a good practice of yoga, you're up in the morning, you were meditating, and then something happened to you, your mind may go like this. It'd be some pensiveness. In fact, you know, animals are just instinctive, because I hope I'm not offending the pet lovers of the world, they have nothing against them, but they're just instinctive. So they'll just react. They don't really have free will. They like something, they do it, basically. And the higher platform is you want to make good decisions. You don't want to just respond. You want a distance between what happens to you and how you react. You want to be in this platform of goodness. So I'm going to now give you some practical examples. Let's start with sound. Now again, every object is in different modes. There's music in goodness, there's music in passion, there's music in ignorance. And according to your association with that mode, it will have an influence on your mind. Powerfully will have an. In fact, I'll give an advertisement. Okay. The next lecture I give here next month will be called Yoga Made Easy by Music. How Kirtan Works. There's such a powerful correlation. Let me just give you an example of this. So sound is, and we're going to concentrate on sound at the end. It's very, very powerful. Of all the senses, hearing is the most absorbing. That's why when you meditate on mantra, because it's the one thing that can absorb the mind more than anything else. And that's why when it's combined with music, it's even more absorbing. So this is just a practical example, just to give you a little framework how it works. And I think we'll have the time for discussions and questions also. I was listening to a series of lectures called What Would Socrates Do? And it was a wonderful professor. And the professor was from Boston University or something. It's these tapes, and I'm driving, I have a car here. Driving to different places and giving lectures, and so I'm listening. And I forgot the reference why, but it discussed something that I noted very, very much. It discussed in an ancient dynasty of China. And I know this too about Confucius. Confucius was very concerned with, you know, ethical behavior, and said a lot about music and its relationship to behavior. He said a lot about him. And Plato, in Plato's system of education, basically, the two things that you learn when you're young basically were, you can call it yoga and music. That's what it was, the basic education for children, because there was such a, they understand there's such a correlation between the external and internal. And to harmonize the soul. But this is just a practical example. So what happened was, just like a New York example, a lot of crime, limited police force. Where do you put the police? Now the emperor, what the emperor did was he sent around spies to go to each village. And in each village, he, you know, the villages were homogeneous. not like today. It wasn't the, you know, the melting pot. One place was like this, one place was like that. He sent them to the villages and listened to the type of music they listened to. According to the type of music, he put his police force. Now, why? Because not only do the music and the whatever object you have affect the consciousness, but your mode of mind also indicates what your desires are too. Some people have their desires are intense materialistic activity. Some people they really want enlightenment, and some people want immobility. I should also mention, this is very key, just as there's three primary colors, these modes are like, they can be mixed in unlimited ways, but for discussing them, we just have three distinct, you know, categories. So what happens is like this, according to the mode that you're in, you'll like the environment that way. And you'll choose your sounds, you'll choose your visuals, you'll choose your tastes, and your environment will be like that. I wrote an article in my book that I have here. I think today maybe I'll give out some copies if people are interested. It was called How New York City Was Created According to This Science. It basically goes something like this. It's an island. It's good for trade. It's good for materialistic activity from the very beginning. So what happens? Materialistic people become attracted. Not bad, but you know, ambitious people become attracted to trade. Then they reproduce. They create more. You know, people like them. And they create an environment according to that. What's the environment that you know increases material ambition? Increases, you know. Then they create that environment which attracts more people, and then you get a city in that mode. And I'm a faithful New Yorker. I defend our place. I like it. Don't worry about that. But I have to be objective. So what happens is, all around the world, people of particular mode come to New York because you can breathe it in the air. You walk down the street and you want more. Because that's what passion is, more and better. I have that article I wrote, how the whole thing gets created. That's why I'm so attracted. I'm supposed to be a sadhu seeking a fight and thought. New York, you know. But I notice my tastes are changing as I'm advancing. And the country, mode of goodness. But not today. Because that's talking about a village. Where you just walk across the street, not you get in your Subaru, what is that car they like there? What?
Suburban?
No, they all get those four-wheel drive. What?
Subaru.
It's not, you know, you drive. I mean, New York has some aspects, a little bit village-like. You walk different places. Things we're going to discuss that, but places are in different modes. So people. So what did he see? That person. What did that person? What did he understand? He understood when that music was like this, the people were more inclined to be like this. And what is this? If goodness is light, this is darkness of ignorance. Ignorance. You can't see things clearly in the mode of ignorance. Even in one day, if your mind goes like this, you're liable to do things that you wouldn't if you had been practicing yoga and meditation in the morning. You know, the same person in the same day may have a little bit aspect like this where he wouldn't have done something that he did when his mind was like this. So it leads to immorality. So when he saw that the music was like this, then it meant that the people were like this. There'd be more immorality. Even today, the music is like that. The music that's heavily in ignorance. There's other factors. Sometimes young people... people that really want a spiritual ideal. They become so frustrated with things, they want to destroy things. You know, so there's other factors that are in there, but all things being equal. The music is like this, and the people are more attracted to crime. Or if they're not more attracted to crime, they have less ability to control themselves when their desires come. So you see the correlation. It's simple, but it's so powerful in our life. And I'll tell you more about my experiment myself and how successful I was. But another example was, and this is a good New York example, when I grew up, probably except for a few of our senior citizens that have come in the back there, I'm probably older than most people here. And I'm from New York. I was in New York where no one would go through the Port Authority. But then there was a problem, all these cars coming into New York. So they wanted that, with all these cars coming into New York, they wanted to bring them to the Port Authority, so they had to clean it up. You don't know what the Port Authority was like 25 years ago. No respect, you know, I was shocked when my mother moved out to Jersey. You know, they had this bus system coming into the Port Authority, and I saw people with suit and ties, you know, standing by the bus station on Route 9, ready to get on the bus. What are you going to the Port Authority? No respectable person goes to the Port Authority. So they wanted to clean it up. So what were there were, I don't know how to put it in a way, I'm not making political statements, homeless, whatever. We would say bums. Whatever the case is, that's what we call them at the time. But they were attracted to a certain type of environment. They called in the police dragged them out. 2 days later, they were all there. The police dragged them out. 2 days later, they were all there. The police dragged them out. 2 days later, they were all there. So what happened was, eventually, sometimes they didn't know the science, but somehow they figured, they changed the music in the Port Authority. And they started playing this real, like, dun, 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 dun. People left. Because your mind is like this, you don't want music like this. Right? Your mind's like this, you want to get rid of the people? Hardcore. They'll get out of there. So there's a correlation. And it's not just psychological, it actually changes. It changes the matter. It changes the matter. So music is just so, so important. The objects of sound are so important. Now we can talk about sight, the object of sight. The object of sight in the mode of goodness is cleanliness. Cleanliness has a profound effect on the mind. Now, I should mention there's some kind of concept here that I'm gleaming from this, that there's a workable position of this world that facilitates you in the objective of this world, which is enlightenment. And it's like the machine. The machine kind of gets broken into the modes. Doesn't enable you to conduct enlightenment, awareness. So that's what happens. When things get cluttered, when things get dirty. Because you see, this sattva gun, it's called sattva, S-A-T-T-V-A, sattva. It's also called the nature of being. It actually is the pure nature of matter. So when things deteriorate, and you let them deteriorate. You're changing its influence on your ability to do different things. So, in India, there would be a class of people. It's not caste. That's a little bit misunderstood. But there would be teachers. They would be called Brahmins. And the duty of the Brahmins, there would be a class of people in society that their duty would be to realize truth and disseminate truth. It's really important that there should be a teacher class, not just of trades, but there should be a class of people whose only business is to understand truth and disseminate it. It means they have the ability to see things clearly, and they have the character and personality to invoke trust in others so that they can learn. Very, very important in society to have that type of class. One of the main things that a Brahmin would be doing is cleaning. They would always keep clean. They would always have a water pot. I mean, it's a little bit more to the level, because, you know, it's like, if you have a clean glass of water, any speck of dirt becomes a big thing. If it's a little muddy, it doesn't make so much difference. But they would keep themselves pure, and they would always be cleaning. I went to a community of Brahmins in Gujarat, one state in India. It's actually, you know that person, Yasomati Nandan. I went to his mother's house. It was kind of mud floors, but in the city. But like, it's a way to do it in a very clean way. Believe it or not, it's just dry. It was simple, and it was spotlessly clean. And immediately, you go into that environment, you feel peaceful. Your perception increases. You feel more content. And now, cleanliness is not the only thing. I mean, someone can be anal about cleanliness and be a jerk about it. You know, everything, the whole rest of it. Life can be, you know, in ignorance. You know, you can have a clean house and be listening to the worst music and doing the worst thing. But it's an important factor. I know a friend of mine, whenever he begins to study or write, first thing he does is clean his desk. It's not just psychological. It's physical. There's something that happens and changes things in your consciousness. Very, very important. And in terms of my own vow, I mean, I hope I'm in goodness. In other ways, I'm a little cluttered. I really worked on it. So, I went back and I had 2 weeks up at my place. I wanted to do this Rutter of vow. I mean, the first thing I did is I just started, I'm traveling, I don't have time. I started just to clean, put things in, and create that atmosphere, simple. Get rid of the clutter, the different things. Profound effect on consciousness, no doubt. Of course, diet is also important. The food you eat is important. Even, a yoga studio, if it's kept very, very clean, and the people that are teaching have a certain personality, just by being in that place, people's consciousness will change, they'll become more happy, they'll become more peaceful, and they'll be attracted to that place. So I worked on it. What does it mean? When I live in my place, I do everything myself. I cook, I wash my own clothes, I do everything myself. So what happens? Here's an example. You cook. Now what do you do with the dishes? Why don't you clean them immediately? I have a god sister, it means we have the same guru. She wrote a cookbook that won the Seagram's Cookbook, the International Cookbook of the Year Award. She's an amazing person. And whenever she's cooking, she's so in the mode of goodness that it never gets dirty. She's cleaning as it's going along. Now, what does it mean if you just leave the dishes? It takes 5 minutes. You just leave them there. Or you take the cup off, or you put it here. Or you take off your jacket and you throw it here. Or all the myriad of things that we do. Why don't you do it? Why are you not mindful? What's the reason? There's either one or two reasons. You're passionate. And therefore, you're in the future. You think there's something more important to do. And therefore, your environment is like that. You create your own environment, and it affects your consciousness. Or you're ignorant. You know, either you have something else to do, or you don't want to do what should be done at the moment. And I saw this with myself. You know, and everything's training. You know, so I saw this with myself. Like, why am I not doing this? Why is it like a force? After I eat, I have to do the dishes now. I have to clean the floor. Why am I not doing this 5-minute thing? If I'm not doing it, it's some kind of ignorance. And what's the result of that ignorance? The environment becomes ignorant and it impacts my consciousness. And it prevents me from having self-discipline, because this is the platform of goodness which gives you that self-discipline and control. You're in this platform. And I saw how it worked. Okay, here it was. Do the dishes. Okay, they're like this. Here's my mind. I don't want to do it, but I do it anyway. It creates the environment. It impacts my consciousness. And I'm just saying, I mean, I was able to do that vrata and continue the vrata now. The impact of just changing the environment. Just changing the environment and don't, you know, overeating, mode of ignorance, etc. What foods you eat are in the different modes. Controlling the diet more. Gave me so much more self-discipline. This is a great science of India that can be immediately impacted in one's life. So that's the object of the environment and senses and the mode of sight, cleanliness, and then it just goes in some other ways. Ignorance. Very, very important. Brahman means always cleaning. Teacher should be always... Shmo Damastapo Saucham Shantir Arjavam Edaja Gyanam Vigyanam Astikam Brahma Karma. A teacher, they don't mention a teacher's occupation in Bhagavad Gita. When you're a warrior, they mention what you do. You know, or when you're a mercantile person, these are your activities. You trade, you bank, you agriculture, you take care of grazing. You know, if you're a laborer, this is what you do. When they say a teacher, they don't say what you work with. He works by the qualities. And what are the qualities? Shemo Damastapo Saucha. He's clean. He's clean in cleanliness and personal cleanliness. Bathing in the morning. So many things. Okay, so that was just a little bit about the objects of the... and of course, the food you eat, it all affects it. Now I'm just going to go just different things in the modes. I spoke a little bit about a culture. The perfect Indian culture is Brahminical. They know how the environment affects the consciousness. Okay, different places, right? You know, you go to the brothel or the bar. Mode of ignorance. It's going to create that. It's going to bring your mind out. That's just the way it is. And the city basically is in passion, the country is in goodness. So what do you do if you're in the city and that's your karma? Anyway, every place has the modes these days. I described in the country, you got to drive. Traveling, speed is the mode of passion. I should mention too, you have to use the modes. We have to go to sleep, we have to do activities. But in a proper understanding, it's guided by goodness. It's guided by careful thought. Otherwise, the action is unrestrained. Or the immobilization is excessive. It's guided in a proper way. So, the places are different. So therefore, in India, like in some place, you know, you try to get, at least for meditation, you have to find a place that's spotless and not distracted. To give these lectures sometimes, I listen to contemporary talks to find out what people say about different things. And I read listened to this talk called The Paradox of Choice by some psychologist. It was a brilliant thing. He was saying, and choice creates this. Too much choice creates passion. And he gave the example. It was a great example. He gave so many reasons. You know, choice is healthy, but if it's excessive, it leads to paralysis. He gave the example, like when I grew up, right? When I grew up, we had one television with 7 channels. You know, we had one car in the family. So he was talking, when he grew up, you got a pair of jeans. He said, you got a pair of jeans when you grow up, right? And they didn't really fit. You walked around a while and they fit. So he said, then one day he went in to get the jeans. And the guy said, well, what type of jeans do you want? I couldn't even name all the different styles and cuts and different things. So he spent like, he said, just give me what I used to have before. And they just kept on with his jeans. And he walked out and he got the perfect fit. He said, but then he was in anxiety. Right? He said, because the choices gave him the conception that maybe I missed something better. He also did an experiment where they do health plans for companies and they give you like, you know, 10 choices of things you can invest in. I know it is, but if you do something, they'll match it. So if you don't do it, you kind of lose a certain amount of money. And he gave an example that when it gets to 10 choices, right, people start to choose 2% less things. And if they give 50 choices, that means they choose 10% less things. So actually, choice creates paralysis. And then he gave a really funny thing, too. And I forgot what this is called. But he showed a cartoon of someone in the Hamptons. And it was beautiful. Husband and wife were sitting there. And they're relaxing. And it's just so beautiful. And the husband says to the wife, damn it, you know, it's Sunday morning in New York. I could have got a parking spot right in front of my house. So, but the point is, complication, lack of simplicity, choices, so many choices, so many things. And it's funny, the guy who gave this talk, and it was prestigious, Al Gore was sitting in the audience. So many people. The guy who gave this talk, it's like a formal talk, he had this old clean t-shirt, a pair of shorts, a simple pair of tennis shoes, and a pair of socks. I guess he narrowed down his choices. But the idea is that there's an effect. So, even if good to get a place, this is a envision the morning. If you ever experienced it. In India, the day is divided into, I keep time. I don't go over. The day is divided into 36 48-minute periods called muhurtas. And the muhurta before sunrise, the 48 minutes, is the most powerful impact on the consciousness, the morning in general. See, what happens after the morning? People start to change the natural environment that's conducive to conducting life. For example, I always thought about this. I was in one temple, and they had a beautiful waterfall on the altar, and it was pleasant. And then I thought, why is the waterfall pleasant and a machine unpleasant? Why is one sound conducive and one sound not? Right? And I thought it has to do with the modes. noise is kind of like a perversion of what matter should be. And natural sounds are the original. They have a complete different effect on the consciousness, isn't it? They have a complete different effect on the consciousness. So envision the morning. If you wake up in the morning and get the proper sleep and don't overeat at night, if you wake up in the morning, the whole environment is like this. Even in New York, the sounds, the noise hasn't come up yet, especially in the country. You know, so the environment be like this. If you're up in the morning, it just immediately moves your consciousness. If you're in the morning and you begin to write, there'll be much more clarity. One of my things I do is write. And actually, when I did this whole thing, I did this cleaning thing and then the diet and really just concentrated on my environment, impacted my consciousness, and increased my meditation substantially. I found out in my particular service as writing, I was doing just as much. I would say, simply by creating that environment for myself and impacting my consciousness and keeping it like this, what to speak of the happiness, the contentment, but it's described as light that comes through your senses. What does it mean? Just look, if the lights were off in this room and dimmed, I wouldn't be able to read the page. When there's light, you see things clearer. You know, you may, you know, get up at like, you know, 10 o'clock, and even if you're in the country, kind of, you know, run outside and, you know, be in the mode of passion. You won't smell things, you won't taste things, you won't hear things, you won't appreciate anything. Because your mind is not in that. But if you wake up early in the morning, immediately your mind, you'll be much more peaceful. And what to speak of when you meditate. I do a lot of meditation, and I can tell you that the meditation before the sunrise is so much more powerful than anything else. Because you're in the environment, the natural environment, that's conducting enlightenment and helping you to get light in your senses and see things clearly. It's a great science. How we do this. People are also in the modes. I was on the plane, and on one side was this person from Juilliard. On the other side was another type of person. I talked to both of them. Somehow, I don't know why people talk to me. Or don't. But the people affect you so much. A saintly person is a person whose mind is like this. And when you're with that person, wow, all of a sudden you feel peaceful. All of a sudden there's some effect on the consciousness. People. And what happens in modern society, because when you admire someone in a mode, or any mode, then that comes to you. If you admire someone in the mode of ignorance, and then you associate with them by hearing about them and emulating them, it makes the mind like this. That's why really a proper society, and what's lacking in modern society, is actually training this class of people who just cultivate qualities. Peacefulness, tolerance, self-control, cleanliness, spirituality, knowledge, realization, or simplicity, or austerity. Because those type of people, just being in their presence, it impacts your consciousness. So the people, the intimacy, who you keep intimate contact with, affects your consciousness greatly. Now, even if it's like this, and you're like this, you don't have to be affected. Depending on how you also relate to the environment, there's something, you know, your understanding of things, your perception of things. But it's certainly. I remember when Amy, not Amy, because I was just with your friend Amy. It's what a wonderful time we had. But I was giving a lecture up in Carmel, New York, and Bryn came. And then we were with those yoga teachers. And I was impressed. Remember they told us they had a media fast? You remember? What's her name? I forgot. What?
Amy.
Yeah, the Amy up there.
Right.
Or maybe they talked about the media fast. In other words, Marshall McLuhan, you've probably heard of him. He wrote a book called The Medium is the Message. It's not just the contact that comes that affects you, it's the medium. And this overload of information, this movement, true rapid movement, really creates passion, really moves your mind. And this is anxiety, actually. Material consciousness, more, better. Rather than this, people are just satisfied because they're experiencing something internally. So I see, you know, I had a big decision. I haven't made the decision yet. But because I give lectures and it's such a good communication tool, and even other swamis are telling me, you got to get on Facebook. You got to get on Facebook. And this is my big existential crisis. I someone should say to me, I should only have such problems. That's my big existential crisis. Should I get on it? Should I not? How? And it's a facility, and my spiritual path is not renunciation, it's dedication. Bhakti is dedication. You don't give up things that can be used in the proper way, but I'm very, because I want to be that person who cultivates this consciousness and can help people. I'm torn between the communication facility I'll get to contact people and what it'll do to my consciousness, so that when I do contact them, what will I be able to give them? I'm torn. I'm trying to figure out how to do it, and then, you know, someone said, you know, someone can do it and you just have fans. And I just said, that sounds so egotistical. I mean, I would just die to become my fan. I know the words don't mean that. But, you know, I'm just like torn about this. I really need some help. Some counseling. But I see it. I mean, the world is like this. Every moment, everything's coming in, everything, moment by moment. And what is this? It keeps your mind in anxiety. It does keep your mind in anxiety. Sometimes, I wonder, tomorrow you'll all get a message, you know, Dhanadhara Swami wants to be your face. What can I say? It may happen. But no, it's from a platform of goodness. I made that decision. But, you know, I want to communicate with people, but the medium, and you know, previously, I had a friend, this is also discussed in my book, he grew up in a village in India. Never had to leave the village. Everything was in that village you needed. Medical stuff, there were people that knew the local herbs, entertainment. Every day there were kirtans that could be heard through the whole village, or there were kathas, that's talks about Ramayana, Mahabharata. These stories of India will keep you on the edge of your seat more than anything else. In fact, they had it on TV once, the Mahabharata, the great history of India. And it coincided with the session of Parliament in India. They had to cancel the Parliament. They had to change the time of the Parliament because people couldn't go. All the members of Parliament will watch. These stories are so engaging. So in these villages, the stories, he would listen to the stories. They would hear the stories. There wouldn't be that movement. Now, one thing about the class today, when I come to a class, I like to be in this mode. And I think about it before. I'm very careful on that day what modes I associate with, because I want to give something and I want to have full access to what I give, and therefore I want to be in that proper mode. It'll affect even my talk. If my mind is like this or my mind is like this, I'll have less access to what I already know. So I'm worried because I have to say honestly, my friend who sat on the lap of Elvis, I went to Nashville, Tennessee, left Saturday morning at 6 o'clock, and I returned Sunday morning at 6 o'clock. Something I tried to get out of. You know, and finally, about a week ago, I said, "Okay." He said, "No, come down. I'll help out." Help with the ticket. I said, "I really don't think that this should be done. I mean, it's such a short time." I said, "Okay," but I said, "You're my friend. Whatever you say, I'll do. It's your decision. I don't agree that I should come down for such a short time." So then he waits a week and then calls me on Thursday. "I want you to come." Then I'm just thinking. Movement, wow, the plane, how it affects the consciousness. Just that movement, New York, how it affects that consciousness. I'm going to call it flying in here, late for the class, open up the door, do a New York comedy routine where I stumble and fall into the crowd, and just like, what's... But anyway, so I was worried about the movement. So this is a great science. And what I hope from this class is you can pick out something in your environment. Now, there's another thing that there's two more things I really want to do here. I know people do make changes, in their life. Karmically, you may not be able to go to the Suffolk Village and, whatever it is. And, you're in New York City, a place, cleanliness, sounds, people, food, they're all in different modes. If you want self-discipline, this is the platform. You'll be able to accomplish much more. For me, really it was, this is my environment here. I'm going to keep this environment clean, orderly, throw out things, clutter, tremendous effect on consciousness. My diet, what I eat, how I eat, when I eat, tremendous effect on consciousness. The sounds, different people have different habits. The media, you have choices to make. Happiness is not just what is happening to you, it's how you're responding to you. So you really do have individual choices. That's why, I want to be part of the Yoga Maya and give classes and try to give you insight on things that can be done. Actually, I have an idea. Okay? Now, if my cell phone rings, I'm going to be careful with that. Because it's in my pocket. And I forgot to shut it off. But, I think one thing we can do to end also is, we can do this kirtan. Because these are mantras. There's something actually even beyond modes. There's the pure awareness itself. Because actually, what the modes do, they all facilitate selfishness in a certain way. And real pure awareness is selflessness. And real mantras and the proper melodies in music, they have such an impact on consciousness. That's why practice in the morning is important. Because what does practice do in the morning? What does even meditation do? This is what meditation basically does. Here's the mind. You wake up. In fact, you sleep in different modes too. That's why it's important what you do before you go to bed. It'll affect your sleep. If you sleep in too much in the mode of ignorance, you won't get well rested. If you sleep too much in the mode of passion, you won't be well rested. So you wake up in different modes. So this is really what meditation does, really, especially in the early... mornings. and we're going to explain how kirtan works next class. But what happens is here's that pure mind, and there's vrittis. They're the transformations, basically based on selfishness. And I'm using it in the broadest sense, because we do have desires that are for us that have to be fulfilled. Just how you fulfill them. It's not cutting off everything. But what meditation does is all these vrittis, these thoughts, so they're transforming the mind. And again, this is the lens. So when you're looking through it, you're not seeing reality. Every group of self-help, spirituality, has a basic conception that if we increase your perception, if we help you to understand things more clearly, you'll be a better and more happy person. So this is affecting your perception. So what meditation does is by focusing on just one thing, one thought, you neglect the others. And if you understand yoga psychology, then what happens is when you neglect thoughts, they dissipate. And what happens is then by that thing, the mind comes to a platform of goodness. And then you go in the world with more self-discipline, more free will. How many times do we do things impulsively that we suffer for? So, I think it'll be nice to end with some kirtan for 15 minutes in meditation, just feeling how mantra and sound, how powerfully it can impact the mind. I probably will have to do this in another class, but I do want to give a class on how you form good habits according to the psychology of the mind. You see this little band here which says Jai Radhe? This is one technique that I use. And initially it was used with criticism, but not just criticism born out of something ill, is legitimate criticism. Most of what we do is not. At least what I do. So criticism, which is usually based on some enmity, really moves the mind to ignorance. So a friend of mine showed me this, and the way it works is this. You put it on one hand, right? And anytime you're going to criticize, you know, out of that enmity, etc., if you do, you have to switch it and put it on the other hand. Now, the goal is to keep it on one hand for 3 weeks. Because if you can follow something that's proper for 3 weeks, because when you do something that's proper, what happens? As soon as you do something that's proper, even if it's a sacrifice, in other words, it doesn't give you immediate pleasure because you really want to criticize someone, and that's something that's going to really give you a lot of pleasure. But if you do Dharma, you do what's right, what Dharma does is it moves your mind to a higher platform of satisfaction. So after a while, if you can do, for 3 weeks, even if it's your impulse, you have to sacrifice. What will happen is you'll get an impression in the consciousness that gives you more pleasure for not criticizing than pleasure you get from doing. And they generally say if you do for 3 weeks, a habit. And one day, we'll have to get a chalkboard. I think I can give one class on yoga psychology and show how the mind works, the manas, the buddhi, and how practically it works to create habits. It's a very, very interesting science. So I thought maybe what we can do that if anyone wants to either try not criticizing or wants to do something in terms of picking up after yourself to keep things cleaner or, you know, not, you know, you can try this and try to keep it on one wrist for 3 weeks. And you'll see you can create a habit because you'll get more pleasure from not doing that silly attachment that's giving you temporary pleasure. And you'll be able to... So what I'm going to do is, I have enough here. After the class, if anyone wants to pick it up, another thing I'm going to do is, I think I left 6 copies of a book I have, and in that book I have the story of, it's a journal of me in India where I shared my realizations, especially I shared the realizations of other sadhus that, other saintly people that just gave me such nice realizations I wanted to share with others. I started about 10 years ago and someone one day said, wow, you have a nice blog. I said, what's a blog? But I was writing this journal and people liked it. I left 6 copies here. So if anyone's interested, they can just take one because people generally have given some donation to come to the class. It's fine. So I'll leave some books here. I can even sign them if anybody wants. If they're interested in reading a journal of someone in India with those kind of, you know, sharing realizations, we can do that.